design vous offre dans la robe que vous porterez, mesdames, la beauté, la magie, le modernisme, le style. Si l'élégance et le chic ont un nom, messieurs, ce nom, c'est le magasin Marco Mode Unisex, partenaire de franklinmandesign.com. Marco Mode Unisex, 9205 Saint-Michel, pour les hommes et les femmes qui veulent habiller leur beauté. Pour plus de renseignements, tapez marcomode.ca ou téléphonez au 514 322 83 66.
Hey, this is the R-O-X-A-N-N-E, and you are listening to CKUT.
What's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. I'm your host for the evening, Kim Dominique Ferguson, and we have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Make me harder, make me lose my breath, make me water, make me sweat, make me harder, make me lose my breath, make me water.
I could keep my cool, but tonight I'm whining. I'm a bee in a dangerous mood. Can you match my timing? Telling me that you're really about it. What you're hiding? Talk is cheap, so show me that you understand. I like it.
Yes, yes, we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and tonight's guest is Christian Theodore, a versatile individual with a passion for understanding, connecting with, and positively impacting the people around him. As a brand ambassador for the Great Gentleman Sodas, as well as helping to manage one of the city's premier cocktail bars, Bar Le Mal Nécessaire, he likes to bring a Caribbean flair to the world of beverages and use his experience as a bartender to create unforgettable experiences for patrons. Beyond the bar, Christian showcases his passion in the realm of sports as an MMA competitor, training under the esteemed David Loiseau, a former 3-time world champion and UFC number one contender with aspirations to go professional. A dynamic individual, Christian also shares his knowledge by teaching striking at Crow Training Center in Saint-Henri. When not honing his craft in the octagon, he enjoys sharing his deep love for music as a DJ, seamlessly blending the worlds of flavorful beverages, athleticism, and rhythm. You can find this MMA fighter, mixologist, and brand ambassador on his Instagram, the.haitian.sensation. And he is here tonight. Christian, welcome to Soul Perspectives. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm excited to have you on. I've known you for more than a decade now, I want to say. At least a decade. How are you doing? Like, what are you up to nowadays?
I'm doing good. Right now, I'm in the middle of preparing for my next fight, which is going to be in Quebec City, December 9th.
Okay.
So kind of just like, you know, that's going to be very, very soon. So, yeah, just kind of doing the last little bits on the fight camp. You know, I'm in the tough parts of it physically and mentally, but honestly, I just can't wait till the fight, you know?
All right.
Other than that, yeah. Other than that, with Gentleman Sodas, we just recorded a whole slew of videos so that I'll be coming out within the next couple months that are, you know, honestly, this is a new kind of experience for me. And so, like, I'm finally kind of getting comfortable in it. I'm kind of finally feel like I'm understanding what they're looking for, what the audience is looking for. And I'm kind of like, you know, more comfortable with experimenting with new recipes and new kind of funky things. So I think a lot of cool stuff's going to be coming out there.
Amazing.
Soon. And at the bar, same old. We're, you know, DJing, making good drinks, and keeping the vibes going, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's exciting that you have a fight coming up. You said December 9th?
Yeah.
That's yeah. Amazing because you had a fight not too long ago, which you finished that fight within 30 seconds, I believe.
Yeah, I think it was 31 seconds or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, it was so like I kind of what happened was like I've been in fight camps since I came, so I went to Thailand. Mm-hmm. And I came back in May.
Okay.
And I've been supposed to fight in June. I was supposed to fight a month after that. I had like 3 or 4 cancellations last minute. So like I've been in a fight camp for the longest. And yeah. Then I finally got the fight on the 28th. And I finished that, like you saw, in 30 seconds. And so we kind of, no injuries, we were ready. And I kind of like, I wanted to keep it going. I want to kind of have another one before the end of the year.
Yeah.
So yeah, we got one in Quebec City, December 9th. So yeah, we were looking for Montreal. It was supposed to be this weekend coming up.
Right.
But, I couldn't find anybody on such short notice. So Quebec City it is. Yeah.
All right. So tell me a little bit about how you got started in mixed martial arts. Like, what was your motivating factor to become a person who throws hands, knees, elbows, and feet at people's faces and bodies in a closed cage? What made you decide to do this crazy, man, amazing, beautiful, horrifying thing called MMA?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I never thought I would actually be in a cage, you know, in front of people half naked, throwing hands and the feet and that, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
When I first started, the whole point was, I was at a point in my life where I had stopped playing hockey for 3 years already. Cause I stopped at 16 cause I was in college and I couldn't keep up with my classes. And then driving an hour after school to go to practice. And then I was exhausted. It was just, and then wake up early the next day to go back to school. I had just a terrible schedule, and
right.
Hockey had to be done away with
right.
at the time. And I think that probably contributed heavily to me I think there was a time where I was very depressed. I was also at school and I didn't know what I wanted to do with it. I was just kind of exploring. I was learning to be social a little bit. I was kind of starting to go out with friends and I was more interested in that.
Right.
And so like, you know, with the stress of like taking loans for school and you know, not really knowing what I wanted to do with it, I was kind of I was in a point in my life where I was a little bit depressed. I had gained a lot of weight. I was always a big kid, but there was a point in time where I got on a scale and I was over 300 pounds. Wow. And I was like, okay, that's a hard limit for me. You know, I'm 6 foot, 300 pounds. That's not great, you know? So that was the point in my life where I decided to just, I needed to do something. Whatever. I didn't know what it was. I was just going to do something. And I had a moment. So how I was introduced to mixed martial arts was like, I had heard about it, but it was a time where I was working at in the Alzheimer's ward in a retirement home.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working the night shift, mostly like just kind of like security, make sure everybody's like, you know, when they wander off and get lost, like bring them back to their room kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Also probably contributed to my depression a lot.
Yeah.
And I was watching fights because they were playing a lot of Georges St. Pierre replays of fights on RDS and stuff. And that was all there was to watch on TV. So I was watching it in the sense of like, I could never, you know,
right.
I was like, this is some crazy, I don't want to say crazy white people stuff, but that's what it felt like to me. You know,
right.
It was like, this is crazy. I could never,
mm-hmm.
But it was interesting. Because growing up, I always liked martial arts. I always wanted to do martial arts. I would just never had, there was a few opportunities, but like I was playing hockey, I would play basketball. I played literally every sport. I played hockey, football, basketball, soccer. I played, everything. Hockey was my main sport. And on top of that, I didn't have time to like go to a taekwondo gym like I wanted to or do. I did karate for a few months at school. I did taekwondo for a few months at school, but like nothing real.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad and I, growing up, that was like kind of like one of the ways we bonded was just he would bring burnt DVDs of like old martial arts films and stuff, and we
right.
would watch those. And I was probably way too young to watch them, but like because I remember like watching. I don't know if you've ever seen Ong Bak.
Yeah,
it's like a yeah
yeah.
So there was a lot of scenes in there that I just didn't understand. And I was like, okay, but the kicking in the elbows and the knees was really cool. So that's kind of like how I didn't even know it was Muay Thai, but I was just really, I really loved it.
Yeah.
But so fast forward, I was at that point in my life where I was looking for something else to do. Hockey was done. And I kind of found, I was honest with myself. I was like, I needed something that's going to make me stay, like I was gonna want to keep doing. I needed something. I'm the type of person, like if I feel like I'm doing something, if I'm bored, I'm not gonna keep going. If I don't feel like I'm learning something useful, I'm probably not gonna keep going. I'm gonna find excuses to not go, or like when it gets hard, I'm just gonna be like, you know what, it's not, you know. So and then the perfect intersection of, you know, I wanted to do something that make me feel like I'm learning a useful skill, which is self-defense,
right?
It felt fun, and I'm a competitive person. Like, I played a lot of video games, and I'm always, like, the competitive kinds of video games and things. And I was like, you know what? Let me do away with all that for a little while and then just try to get that competition in the gym. And so I did some research, and I had heard of David Loiseau before.
Right.
And I'd seen other gyms. But I was like, okay, I recognize that name and that face. So I was like, you know what? Let me just show up and see what it was like. And I told myself I was just going to show up for 1 week. No matter what, I forced myself 1 week. If I hated it, it's just 1 week. And if I love it, we'll see how it goes.
Right.
And so I showed up. I think I showed up on like a Tuesday. It was they used to have boxing and Muay Thai and I think Jiu-Jitsu, all three in one day.
Right.
And I was just like, you know what, let me just show up. And I just did all of them, you know. And I was exhausted. And by the time we got to the Muay Thai, I kind of like quit halfway through the class.
You had to tap out.
The old Muay Thai teacher was a crazy French Cambodian guy, and he would yell at you or make fun of you in front of everyone. It was all in love, but it was also like some stuff that he said would like hurt your ego a lot.
Right.
You know? So that was a little bit part of like what contributed. Like I showed up thinking I'm like, you know, I'm a big dude. I played hockey. I've gotten in fights in hockey. I've gotten in fights outside of that. And I'm like, I can handle myself or whatever.
Yeah.
And I showed up and I'm also like, I can see a movement and recreate it. So they thought I kind of like when we're doing the pads and the classes, oh, okay. He kind of knows what he's doing. Kind of, you know, he's picking it up quick. So they're like, come on Friday night. We have sparring.
Right.
So I showed up on Friday night, and there was, her name is Margot Sumatri. She showed up. She was like, yeah, I've been in Indonesia for a couple months on vacation. I'm a little rusty, so like take it easy on me. She was my first round.
Right.
I remember this to this day. I was like, okay, yeah, I'll take it easy on you. I know how to hit pads, but I don't know what it's like to like, when you're getting punched at is different.
Yeah.
So my hands are up, and she just, boom, boom, and then hits me with a hook to the head, to the side of the jaw, and then my mouth was wide open, and I was like, what just happened? And I couldn't eat right for weeks. And this little, she was like 5 foot, I'm 300 pounds, like a foot taller, and at least 200 pounds more than her.
Yeah.
And she messed me up, man. It was a problem. And then, so that was the problem. And then rounds, every other round after that, I was just one after another, just getting beat up. And so I think it was a little bit of a big shock to me and an ego like thing. So that was the first thing that kept me coming back was like, okay, I can't let that be a thing that could happen to me.
Right.
In the streets, you know, like
that's like, interesting, okay, like, because one would think that, you know, you would decide not to go back because you got beaten up. But because you got beaten up, yeah, you said, man, I'm not going to let that happen again, which is how
Yeah, no, I'm very, like I said, I'm very competitive when I need to be. And I was also like, you know what, like, at least I'm going to learn. I was thinking I'm going to go maybe for the summer. Because I started, it was like a little bit before my birthday, so late May, early June.
Right.
And then I was like, that was kind of like my birthday gift to myself. I'm going to do 1 week, at least I achieve something and I'm going to feel good about it. And then that happened. And so then I got obsessed. So over, you know, it was like every week I would train just so that I could do slightly better on that Friday, and then train slightly better on the next Friday. And then that's how the ball kept rolling. And there was never like a weight loss thing. It was just like, I wanted to do something.
Yeah.
And then after a few months, that's when I realized like, yeah, man, I started losing a lot of weight. And then, you know, I was doing better and better. And that's the beginning of my journey into the martial arts thing. I never really thought I was going to compete or anything like that. Yeah.
Right. Because I remember, because we met at Stella's place downtown back in the day. And I remember I think I met you at the beginning of summer, maybe before, maybe a little bit before summer. And then there's another gathering like midsummer. And I remember looking at you and going, yo, you look deezed up. Like, what are you doing? And I remember there was a huge transformation. And I mean, the transformation wasn't only physical, but it also appeared in the way that you carried yourself, and you had a different level of confidence. And I was like, damn. And to this day, I'm like, I wish I had gotten into it earlier, because I really had a great admiration. And I was so happy when I found David Loiseau's gym, and then I found out that you were there as well. It was kind of like almost
so
like
a
reunion.
I thought you joined because you knew I was there.
No, I didn't remember. It wasn't until I saw you there that I remembered that you had said that you were going there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Oh, man, that was so long ago. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
But man, it was just, that's the thing about it. It was like, I was never, because I was never setting out to do the weight loss thing or whatever, it was just, I wasn't thinking about it. It just happened. Like one day my gi didn't fit right anymore, and people started like pointing it out, and I'm like, what? And then next thing I know, I got on the scale. I'd already lost like 50 pounds, and I was like a few months in, like literally over the summer. It was crazy. And then just from like finding something that I liked and sticking with it. And that's the thing too, the thing that it helped me the most with, like you said, was I finally found a real kind of confidence, you know, because I was always like, I'm an introvert, and I kind of was learning how to be in social situations and be comfortable and blah, blah, mm-hmm. and also comfortable with myself. Right. And I, when I found this, and I was like, this is, I was in my head, this is something that's super impossible. I would never do, and I would never, let alone be good at, you know, I could never, you know?
Right.
And then you start doing it, and you're terrible at it. And like I told you, I got beat up by someone who's like, I could have fit three of me inside her. It was three of her inside me. You know what yeah. I mean? It was like crazy. And then that was a big shot. But then over every week you come back, you do all the hard, the whole thing that you think was impossible. You do it all week, and then you're doing slightly better, slightly better, slightly better. Then you're like, you're starting to prove to yourself that you can do things that you feel are impossible. You just gotta put your mind to it. And that's where the confidence kind of started to come. And I started to carry that into, because it was around the same time that it was starting to transition from working in kitchens to working behind bars and stuff. Right. And like I said, I'm introverted. So I was like, okay, let me see. I dip my toes in, see if I liked it. But again, to have that confidence to be like, you know what? I'm going to learn how to be around people, how to talk to people. These things that felt impossible, where I was like, well, I get beat up every week and I'm doing better and better. Like, this is nothing. You know what I mean? Compared to that, everything else felt like nothing. So I could just go into most situations with that kind of confidence because, well, worst case, I'm not getting hit in the face. That was what was going on in my head. You know what I mean? So that's what I loved about MMA more than anything else. Like, yes, I learned how to be able to protect myself and the people I'm around when I, you know, cause I work and I live at night. So there's a lot of weird stuff going on too. I've had to be in certain situations where you don't want to be and whatnot. So it's like, you know, being able to feel safe in those situations, that was a big plus too. But the biggest thing it gave me was, man, you're doing something that is probably the hardest thing you could be doing. So everything else in comparison is just like all your other problems and anxieties in life. It's like, you know, I could be getting punched in the face right now. You know, that's the way.
when you compare everything else to, I could be getting punched in the face right now, it doesn't seem like such a big deal.
It's like,
I can do it.
You know, when you're at the bar and the table's taking forever and blah, blah, and they're mad and you're stressed. And it's like, hey, nobody's punching me in the mouth. Let me just go louder and let them know, hey, this is what happened. I'm sorry, blah, blah. And then just, you know, be casual about it. Usually probably your problems get fixed. Whatever your anxieties are in the world, you realize it's like so small when you get out of the gym, you know?
Wow.
That's what that's the big thing that it gave me.
That's interesting.
I feel like that became my superpower. Yeah.
Wow. So yeah, that's really interesting. So, how did the transition go from, okay, I'm just doing this because I want to do something to, now I want to start taking fights? When did that transition happen, and what was the change in your mind?
Man, it was not in, it just, so like I told you, I did it at the beginning of the summer. So by September, my coach, well, David, he was watching it. He's like seeing the, I'm not seeing the improvement. I'm just getting beat up every day.
Yeah.
But he's seeing it. He's like, yo, you should, have you considered, you know, fighting? At that point, I was still pretty much a heavyweight. And I'm like, what am I going to fight, giants? Like, no. Like, I was like, I was just, I told him, yeah, maybe. Yeah, whatever. I'm like, okay, this guy, whatever. He's crazy. I'm not going to go fight.
Right.
And then, so this was a few months in. But then I keep going. And I remember around February, March, there was a lot of guys who were getting ready for, there was this card in Ottawa. That was my first fight, and it's called Heroes. It was called Heroes. And this was because there was a time where MMA was on the, it still is in the gray zone of legality at the amateur level.
Right.
But this was a time where a lot of the shows were starting to get shut down. So Heroes in Ottawa was one of the few ones that was going on. But again, that was the last one they did, and they shut it down right after.
Right.
And a few of the other guys at the gym were doing. And we're I was preparing. At the time where, okay, it had been a few months, and I had, it was February, March. By that time, I was like 170 pounds.
Right.
And so we were looking for somebody at 170 pounds. couldn't find anyone, so we found somebody at 195. So I actually had to end up gaining weight again for that fight.
Right.
So I was happy because I was like, everybody, like I said, a lot of guys at the gym were like getting ready for this fight, for these fights, and they were like, "Yo, you should fight, you should fight." And I was like, I thought with myself, I was like, okay. I didn't necessarily think I wanted to do it, but I was like, I don't want to have that regret later on that I didn't do it. And I knew if I didn't do it then, I probably wasn't ever going to do it. Because right. It was like literally four or five guys at the gym. I think we were four of us who were going to do it together. So I was like, okay, at least I'm going to have my guys. We road tripped over there together and went to one of the guys' mom's house to sleep over, went to his restaurant to eat. Like, it was a whole group thing. And then we fought, you know? And so it was like, you know what? If there's one time to try this, and I was like, in my head, it was literally, I was getting ready. I'm going to get beat up and I'm going to never think about it again. And yeah. It's going to be embarrassing, but it's Ottawa. No one's going to see it. And I'm going to go back home and you know, move on from it. You know, that was my whole idea. So I
should. But then, 12 years later, we're still in the game. Ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly. So what happened was like, I ended up
Before you get into that story, we're going to take a quick break. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking to Christian Theodore, who is a mixologist, an MMA fighter, and a brand ambassador. We do have to take a quick break, pay some bills, play some music. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Whose data? Our data. When you're not paying for a product, you are the product. Especially in web and email services, where multinationals compete to manage your communication so they can make a profit off of the private communication you are producing. Coombit is a worker cooperative trying to help small organizations or individuals get their email, website creation, and website hosting services off corporate services such as Google. For more information, contact us at coombit.org or email at info@coombit.org. That's K-O-U-M-B-I-T. We are not on Facebook.
Take a chill pill, I'ma kill Bill, like a dope show, pharmacological, super logical, you comical, ha 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 ha, you motherfuckers is hilarious, my sister Sagittarius, I'm Aquarius, I carry flows to 514, you know, ride the beats till I'm hoarse, rodeo, I'm at fault like California, don't whine, Napa Valley, BMW, convertible, Xperia, Trump rally, all white windows tinted, people in my city cannot figure how I did it when I did it. I mean, I'm doing it, stay humble, humble, mumble, mumble, mumble. It's like vocal precision hits in the prison of images. We limited by what we watch and read, but that's where freedom lives. The knowledge of college is written down by colonists. Newspaper colonists, let's quote they hollow shit. Fuck a compressor, fuck a limiter, fuck your cap salary player. Your career dragon, I am the slayer, and what I've learned. Things is possible, family. That's the gospel. Destiny is clocking, clocking. I can feel the milliseconds. Do you reckon? Do you reckon?
Yeah. Bring a whole lot of a ton of ball. 50 y'all, but there's a ton of us. Yeah. Cold in the winter. Ready for summer ball. East side, west side, bringing you a ton of ball. Ball. Damn. North side, bring you a ton of ball. Damn. Worldwide, that's a ton of ball. Damn. East side, that's a ton of ball. Yeah. Bringing you a ton of ball. My bucket's infinite. We could go 2,000 rounds. You heard about a ton. That's about 2,000 pounds. Ready to dump it on them. Just double pump it on them. Make them feel like six sumos are straight jumping on them. So you woke? I put you to sleep. Now you got a nap. I spit offensive lines and play the center, man. Guess I got a snap. Ain't no finessing.
Nah.
We use a raw force. Come to the yard and I'll greet you with more swings than a golf course. Featherweights, we don't hang with them. Never. Let's keep it a fair sport. Lobsters took off. My material landed where?
Sounds like a fair touch will turn to gold. Everything I touch will turn to gold. Everything I touch. touch will turn to gold. Everything I touch will turn to gold. And it's okay, say what you gotta say, 'cause you don't know, yeah, you don't know it. But everything I touch will turn to gold.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My guest this evening is Christian Theodore, who is a dynamic individual who is a mixologist, an MMA competitor, and a brand ambassador for the Great Gentleman Sodas. He is also a teacher. He teaches striking at Crow Training Center in Saint-Henri under David Loiseau, and he's training under David Loiseau, who is a former three-time world mixed martial arts champion and a former UFC number one contender. He's been sharing with us his amateur story, and before the break, he had gotten to his telling us a bit about the first time that he had a fight at the Heroes event in Ottawa. Christian, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Yeah, let's get back into it. So you thought that this was going to be a one-time deal. You would have gotten beaten up, but you had your four or five buddies from training camp with you, so it was going to be okay. And you said you didn't want to have any regrets, which I love, because I think that too many people don't take advantage of an opportunity presented to them, and a lot of them, whether they verbalize it or not, inadvertently they have that little regret of like, what if I did this thing?
Exactly. That's
and
the
you
thing
decided
that
to take advantage
I,
of.
I'm like, if I feel like I'm going to have a what if, I'm like, you know what, let's do it. Even though, like, I'm a huge perfectionist.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've worked on through MMA's helped me a lot with that thing, with that stuff, because, man, the fight, you can't be perfect in a fight. Like, you can win a fight and you took hits. That's not perfect, you know? And part of me is like, ah, man, I could have done better, whatever. But, you know, like, my last fight, I won it in 30 seconds and I was still like, with that, oh, you know, I could have been better. So it's like when you're a perfectionist like that, you kind of tend to not want to take these opportunities when they come, because you're like, but it won't be perfect, or I'm not ready, or blah, blah, or this or that. And this was one of the first times where I was like, you know what, let me just jump into it head first and just, you know, follow my heart on this one and not my, like just not let myself get in my way kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it was for the best, really, because, man, like, I ended up showing up. The guy had a couple fights, I think, experience over me. Mm-hmm. It was my first. But my coach felt super confident about it. And for me, it was just, that was the big deal. Because in the gym, I'm training with, like, one of my main training partners. His name's Corrado. And he was a brown belt. He was big. He was a wrestler. He was like a big grappler, and that was my big weakness. So I was getting smashed every day in the gym. I was just getting smashed by him. And then they're showing me how to escape from bottom from a wrestler, because the guy I was going to fight was a wrestler. And it's not working like it's supposed to.
Right.
But yeah. So it's like, for me in my head, I'm like, well, okay, well, I'm just gonna lose this fight. It is what it is. You know?
Right.
But I'm going to try to do as best as I can. And worst case, if I lose, I'm going to make sure he doesn't want to fight me again. That's for sure. You know?
Yeah. You're going to make it a hard loss. You're going to make him work for the loss.
But the fight happened, and it was like, the beginning of it was I was just kind of feeling myself, understand, oh, get, there's a crowd, the distance, the cage. It's like you can't back up. The cage is behind you. It's a weird world. So the first minute was me just getting used to it. And then he hit me, and it kind of hit me in the eye. So I was kind of seeing double for a little bit, and I panicked, and I did the one thing my coach said not to do, right, which is kick him, because a wrestler wants to catch your leg and take you down, which right, is what he did.
Right.
But before I even thought about it, muscle memory kicked in. I did the exact thing that never worked in practice, and boom, next thing you know, I'm back up. And then the confidence starts to build, because I'm like, oh, this came out. I didn't even know how I got up. I just know I got up, and then I was like, okay, this is a fight now.
Yeah.
And then within the next, so I think it was a minute 30, I finished that fight. Within the next 30 seconds, I hit him with a, you know, I saw he would give me a sloppy jab, so I hit him with a cross, and then I did it. And then he was already, his eyes were kind of bouncing around in his head, so I saw he was kind of not there. So he did the same thing again, and I hit him, I think, a couple more times, the same move, and then he just eyes rolled back and KO. That was where I got hooked. That's the moment where I was like, whoa, this is the most powerful feeling ever. Like you hear fighters say, like, if you could bottle it up, you would make $1 billion. It's really crazy. It's a crazy feeling, because you're working for months and you're stressing about it. You have anxiety, and you're like, and then I had, the way I dealt with the anxiety was coming to terms with the fact that I was going to lose. I was just like, okay, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I've been beat up in the gym before. It's just going to be in front of people. It is what it is. Yeah. You know, that's what I told myself.
That's so interesting, because it's like, if the worst you have to fear is that you'll lose the fight in whatever way, then you have nowhere to go but up, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You're just like, well, it's going to be embarrassing. You deal with that in your head, and the rest is like, you know, whatever. If anything else that happens, I'm just going to do the best I can. That's where that's how I was able to get myself to get in that cage and let them close it. Because,
right,
you know, up until you get in there, you can still turn around and be like, nah.
Yeah.
But when they lock it, you're in there.
Once they lock that cage, it's you are in a cage fight.
Yeah. So, yeah, man, it's an experience. It's a fun experience. I think everybody should maybe not necessarily get into a fight in a cage, but, like, try it in a safe environment, in the gym, around people you trust, with proper training. I think it's so beneficial. I think, it's such a great feeling, especially when you train so hard to do it, and you're not even sure how the outcome is going to be, and then you get the best outcome possible, which is a short, quick finish. Man, I was over the moon. I was hooked. That feeling was amazing. It still drives me to this day. You know, you chase that every time you fight. That satisfying, boom, you did it with your hands. It's just you versus him, and you came out on top. You know, that's crazy.
Yeah,
because you know, if he's in your shoes, he wants to do that to you. So it's like, at the end of the day, there is a little bit of like afterwards, we shake hands and like, hey man, thank you for the fight, and kind of like, you know, you have that empathy and whatever. But in the moment of it, man, I just did that. You know,
yeah,
it's crazy. It's primal. It's crazy.
It's not that if he's in your shoes, he's in your shoes. Like you both are in the same pair of shoes. I'm standing across this way, and I can either win this fight or I can lose this fight. And I'm going to do my best not to lose or to win, you know? That's very interesting. And I remember the first time I saw the pictures for the October 28th fight, the first thing I thought to my mind, and I commented on your page, I said, this man reenacted... reenacted the August 5th incident that occurred in Montgomery, Alabama, and he folded this man like a lawn chair, because you took him up in the air, smashed him against the cage, and he was literally folded up like a lawn chair, and you know, ground and pounded him until the ref had to call you off. I thought that was one of the most beautiful. That should be your you know how Dan Henderson has that flying punch that he did to Michael Bisping. That should be your thing. That pickup there, that is amazing. That takedown was amazing. So how, what is your record at right now?
So like amateur wise, I have a weird controversial decision loss that my coach refuses to acknowledge as a loss. So it was a close fight, but I clearly, not really that close. It was a clear win, but they had one judge. It was in Quebec City. It was against a hometown guy, I think. And so they gave it to him.
Right.
But other than that, I have it 1, 2, 3, 4. I think 5 or 6 fights. I don't even remember right now. 5 or 6 fights. Let's say 1 loss. That's right now. I don't have as much experience as I would like, because there was times where, again, you know, with the training and whatnot, I was also working more. I was trying to make money. I was tired of being broke and injured, so I kind of took a lot of time away from training and competing as much, and found the love for it again later on. And now part of me regrets those years, but my coach keeps telling me now, it's like, you're doing it in your time, and this is the moment that you could have done it the right way. Because, and I see it, because the way I'm doing it now, I'm getting less injured, I'm more mature, I know myself better, I'm also learning so much better because I understand the game better. So it's like, you know, I feel like I'm older. Part of me is like, man, I'm 27. I am still an amateur, blah, blah. But my coach is like forcing me to take my time. We're not going pro yet. We have a plan. We have a timeline. And we're taking the challenges as we go, and we're just improving. Like right now I'm training with high-level wrestlers because my wrestling is my big weakness. So I'm just really getting thrown around and learning. Sorry, that was my sister in the background, if you heard that.
No worries.
And learning how to, learning the game, learning the intricacies of what it is like to be a pro, you know? So I took trips to Thailand, and I, you know, when I go to the U.S., I go to see people, go train with at other gyms and with pros and things. So I'm really, like, taking my time to be a proper student of the game so I can do it right when I do go pro. So right now, amateur level, just getting experience. The experience, it's like the losses and the wins, they don't really matter as much as the experience I'm gaining, which is why, you know, I won my last fight 30 seconds. I'm like, okay, I want to get another one while the fight camp is still in me. I'm still in shape. I don't have to lose a lot of weight. And then I can take a break maybe for a couple months this winter, you know?
Yeah. Do you have any idea as to why you have so much difficulty getting fights?
Man,
like, does your opponent give, like, okay, I'm injured, or some kind of indication as to why they're refusing?
Not always. Or they could just stay, because we work through the whatever promoters of the events, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so oftentimes, you know, but I could just text the promoter and say I'm injured, even though I just don't want to fight this person or whatever.
Gotcha.
Sometimes we get injuries or whatever. One time I actually got, the guy was injured and he messaged me, and then we ended up meeting later, and he was like super excited to actually fight me. But he generally got concussed and blah, blah. And that's cool. These things happen. But I think part of it is also like Montreal. It's weird, man, because we have, like, who was just Joseph Pierre, who just voted the greatest of all time, who's from here. But at the amateur level, we can't make another George because, boy, it's tough because, man, it's illegal. It's in the gray zone. Shows are getting shut down, or it's like really hard to get shows going, to get fighters going. But right now, since COVID, there's a big push with a lot of guys who are passionate about the sport to like make competitions happen. So there's more and more opportunities now, at least. But yeah, it was an opportunity thing, but it was also my coach being a big name in the game.
Right.
And also, I think that has a big influence on it. This is what I think. I think my coach being a big name in the game has a big influence on it, because even when I didn't coach, because now I coach, I have my Instagram. I'm trying to promote my coaching through pictures of me, you know what I mean? And like, I'm trying to just get, because I want to be able to get people involved in what changed my life. So I was like, you know what? I'm not going to let some promoters were like, or some friends of mine in the game are telling me, oh man, you should make your Instagram private. Your opponents are going to stop backing out so much and blah, blah. I think that's for them to deal with. For me, I'm just going to keep doing my thing. I'm keep trying to share my love for the sport with the people I love, you know?
Yeah.
And if that gets in the way of me getting certain amateur fights, maybe that person shouldn't be in the ring with me anyway. You know, that's, I want to get good fights. I want to get good experience. I want to get challenges, you know? So that's why I'm like, I want serious people. At the end of the day, if me posting a couple of videos intimidates you, then maybe you're not made for this, or maybe you're not ready for this. And then that's okay. We can move on and find somebody else, because there's some guys who take the challenge and they deliver. So I'm happy to fight those guys, you know?
Yeah.
So if it takes a little bit longer, it takes a little bit longer. If, you know, for me, Coach and I, we have a plan, a timeline, and we're going to stick to it. And we're doing a thing on our own pace, and we have our own kind of blueprint for this. And I'm just going to follow it. And I trust, you know, I trust what he has for me, you know?
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. And you are also a mixologist. And I say mixologist because when I see your videos and I see what you're doing, it is not just, oh, it's rum avec coca, right? You're not just putting some rum and coke together.
Yeah.
You are creating.
Here's the thing about.
You are creating masterpieces.
Yeah.
So how did this come about?
The compliment, thank you. I'm still getting used to that word mixologist because that's what, it was always a word that, I don't know, in the bar world sometimes comes with a little bit of an ego and a like buttoned up and whatever. For me, I'm just like, you know, a cook is a cook, whether you work at McDonald's or you work in a 5-star restaurant, I'm still a bartender. I think for me, the most important part of my thing, the recipes are great. I put them online. So like, to talk about what you were saying, people, I do videos with Gentleman Sodas. So I work with them, and it's a way for them to be able to push their products, but also show, like, give people, they're not just trying to do ads. They want to give content that like people want to watch and learn from, you know? So it's like, I just get to make recipes with their products. And I also get to teach people the stuff that I learned about bartending over the years, you know, because that's what's cool about it. So I give tips. We do history segments. I do creation segments. I do all sorts of things where I talk about all sorts of stuff bar related.
Yeah.
Which is cool. This is why I wanted to do it, because it was like, it was not just, oh, hey, go drink Gentleman Sodas. It's great. We have a new flavor out. That's it. You know what I mean? No, we don't do that. We just literally, hey, I have this cool recipe, or hey, this is a cool trick that I learned bartending from this person. Here's how you can do it. This kind of stuff. So it's like, yeah, man, I get to share the love. I get to do what I do. But for me, it's like, that's only part of the bartending thing. Bartending to me is the big part is the service. If you show up to my, because I would hate for someone to show up to my bar and expect an experience and they just get a good drink. And then me, I just kind of walk away from them and go look around some, you know what I mean? I'm like, no, I want you to, you come, you to my bar, you're going to meet me. We're going to talk. We're going to enjoy. Maybe we dance a little bit. There's the whole vibe going on. And that's the bartending to me, you know? So yeah, like, yes, mixologist, I kind of learning to accept that word. But to me, I'm a bartender. I'm a bartender through and through. I don't feel like even my mixology part is my strength in the game. Like, there's so many better mixologists, there's so many better people to let you to learn from, I think, even in the game. But I'm the type of person, I'm anywhere I'm at, I will learn, I will ask questions, I watch. I watch a lot, I observe. And when I see somebody do something, I ask them, why did you do it that way? Why didn't you do it the other way? Everybody else does it the other way. And then I see for myself, okay, this is, and then I see the, oh, and then that's how I pick up tricks of the trade kind of thing. But I'm not necessarily a book nerd. Some of these guys, they get in the game and they love reading books and doing all these things. Me, I learn from people. I do have books. I ended up over time, you know, getting into that. But in the beginning, it was just really just like, man, learning and watching from all these people I look up to in the bar game. Same thing I do with MMA, really. I find somebody I look up to, somebody I trust that is legit, and I do not I learn everything from him. And if I have questions, I ask and I get an answer, and then boom, you know, that's how I learned. So that's all I'm trying to do with Gentleman Soda, is share all the cool stuff that I get to learn from, because bartending is a cool job.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, I didn't even know how to start, you know? So it's like the fact that now you can have all these resources, and now I'm doing videos to like, hey, if that's something that's interesting you, you can look at these videos and like, okay, you know what? Let me go see if I can apply at a bar somewhere, start busting, bar backing, and then learn from there. And then, because it's the kind of job that if you take it serious, because most people don't, but if you take it serious, you can travel the world with bartending. You can work anywhere. You can do anything. It's a really cool job. So I'm super blessed that Gentleman Soda is giving me the opportunity to like share that with people too.
Yeah. Can you let us know, are you allowed to speak about how you and Gentleman Soda teamed up?
Yeah, I can do that. The way it worked back in the day, so this was about around October last year.
Okay.
They used to do mixologists of the moment. So it was like 1 month or 2 months where they would do a couple photo shoots or a couple video shoots with different mixologists around the city, right?
Yeah.
They had one, I don't know if you guys saw Drink Masters or anybody who saw Drink Masters, they had one with one of the guys from there. They had the last one before me was a good friend of mine, Mickey, who is now, he used to be the GM at the bar where I work at now, but now he part owner at Pamplemousse with his brother. So he's over there. But I think through the industry, people knowing me kind of, they told me that my name got brought up in their next meeting for the next mixologist of the moment.
Right.
And I did my thing. And apparently they really liked it. And it did really well numbers wise. And they were already in the process of trying to switch over from mixologist of the moment to having one person who's a familiar face that people can come back to and keep rewatching and rewatching.
Right.
So they said that was their strategy. They were working on their new strategy for that. And they were looking at who could do it. And they came to me. They were like, hey, are you interested? I was like, yeah, sure. So then they're like, look, we're going to do these auditions. Just send me a little. So I had a friend of mine film a little 30 second to a minute audition tape where we answer a couple questions that they gave us to answer. And then a couple photos, but they had already worked with me, so they saw my vibe, they knew who I was. And then so I sent in the audition, and then a few months later they were like, okay, we're gonna work with you essentially. And that's how we started in June. I think our first video was posted in June. And yeah, apparently, well, so they, from what they told me, I didn't know this, mm-hmm. they told me just the other, actually yesterday, they went from 3,000 followers to 100,000 followers in 5 months. So they're super happy with the work. So that's cool. Cause you know, I do these things and I'm like, again, I'm a perfectionist.
You don't know what the impact is going to be.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I'm like, oh, did I do good? Is it good? Was it? You get the feedback so much later.
Yeah.
And then like people come, they're like, oh yeah, no, I saw you online. I'm like, and they're like, no, it's great. I'm like, okay, I hope so. Like, I swear to God, in the beginning, for the first couple months, I couldn't watch the videos. I was cringing too much. It was hard.
Because you were seeing the little mistakes and hearing the little things that most people don't see.
Yeah, but it's also like, but it's also seeing myself, because especially the first few videos, I'm not yet very comfortable. People, like, they're like, no, you seem good, whatever. Because they don't, I know me, what I felt like when I was doing it. I was like, I wasn't so comfortable. I was trying to be too buttoned up. I didn't know what they were looking for, mm-hmm. but now I can kind of relax into it, be more myself, let my personality shine through. I think the next few batches of videos that are going to come out, it's going to be a lot more fun for people to watch, even though, you know, seemingly people are really liking it already. So yeah. I think we're only going to get better from here. So I'm excited about the next.
Well, I feel like it's the same thing you were saying about muscle memory, because like, when you said about muscle memory for fighting, because you know, you're used to, you've been bartending, you've been doing your mixology for a while. The only difference is now you're doing it in front of a camera. So like, yeah, the muscle memory of doing it is there. So even though on the inside, you know, I feel like you're like me, yeah, you're an overthinker that likes, yeah, things to be done very precise and very, you know, bien, yeah, encadré, very well presented. And if what's in your mind doesn't translate to what's there, it's like, it's almost like it's a complete failure, right?
Exactly. But that's why I'm like, I'm super thankful for the, because we work with a whole team at Drew Media, who, mm-hmm, takes care of like the filming and most of the technical aspects. Like there's a whole crew of people who are taking care of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And they help me. Like they're like, okay, you know, after the first few shoots, they're like, okay, you know, you can do like warm up. They're giving me warm up exercises and they're, you know, they keep like giving me feedback and on the spot telling me things. And I'm also learning what it takes on the backside, the production side of things and whatever. So I'm learning a lot from these guys and they're really cool. They're really fun to work with. So yeah, man, I like it a lot. It helps me get out of my head sometimes when I'm in my head and these shoots. And yeah, that's the thing too. It's like bartending is bartending, but when you're doing it in front of camera, they have to make sure they get every shot. So not only do you have to do it and then take a break and then do it and then take a break, but also it's like you can't just do it the way you do it because you got to be in frame. So then it's like, yeah, okay, so I got to make sure I'm on this spot and I don't move. And sometimes some of the movements are maybe slightly
more awkward.
It's a little
bit awkward where your hand is more to the right than it normally would be. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you're doing it for the camera. It's like some moves I got to do, I can't do it as high as I would because there's the frame, you know? So it's like, okay, I got to do it within the frame, so I got to do it precise. And so maybe I'll take a few takes and mess it up a few times, but because I have to be constricted with my movement. So I'm learning all these little things, you know?
Yeah.
And now it's getting better and better. And also, like, I'm more familiar with the products, so I get to, like, explore some wilder recipes and stuff. So, yeah, man, just having a lot of fun with that now. Yeah, it's really cool. It's a fun opportunity. I'm happy I'm happy they picked me, and I'm happy they're satisfied with the work too. They're super happy with the work. So
yeah,
on the Gentleman Soda side, they're super happy. So yeah, man, I'm keep it up. I will keep them coming out, you know?
Excellent. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time this evening, we are speaking to Christian Theodore, who is an MMA competitor who's trained under the esteemed David Loiseau, former 3-time world champion and UFC number one contender. He also is a mixologist or bartender, as he prefers, and he is a brand ambassador for the Great Gentleman Sodas. And just in case you're wondering, that's one of their brands is the ginger beer brand that I personally love to order whenever I'm out and about. We do have to take a quick break and play some bills. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
There's a lot going on in the world today. See how it affects Montreal's Black and Caribbean community. Read the community contact. News, features, opinions, music reviews, cultural events, and so much more. Our voices, our perspectives, our community. Published every 2 weeks, pick it up at your favorite community spot or visit us online at our new and dynamic website, mtlcommunitycontact.com. Easy to navigate and lots to enjoy. Archived issues also on the site and available on the web. That's mtlcommunitycontact.com. Stay in contact.
The beast upon the street, call we mobbing to the beat. Wanna preach, but just wanna be my enemy. Holding heat, and they could it be the death of me. Why they do what they do? We still fighting to be free.
You already know. Gotta cut the check for the show. Never flex before you go. Rather have me acting like a hoe. No smoke, no.
Yeah, I know them no want no smoke. Them taking man for a joke.
Oh,
yo.
Y'all know that I feel the pain. Baptized, I testify in the pouring rain. You wear a chain, I break a chain. The drama change. Poison veins, I cut it down like sugar cane. Burning effigies of my enemy. If we in the house, then it's fire to the premises.
Put a hex on you. 2-2-3 and a take 2-2. Young nigga who would step on you. Young nigga drop a check on you. Chopper make a nigga lean on you. Shot your man's and made him bleed on you. Bust the chopper make a sneeze at you. Married to the street, say yes I do. I fell in love with my chopper. I had a shootout with the coppers. I'm gon' slide around with my shotter. I'm a menace and a robber. Voodoo, put a hex on you. 2-2-3 and a tag 2-2. Young nigga who would step on you. Young nigga drop a check on you. Chopper make a nigga lean on you. Shot your man's and made him bleed on you. Bust a chopper make a sneeze at you. Man to the street say yes I do. I'm getting higher than the ceiling. I'm off these perks so I can't feel shit. I'm so quick to fucking kill shit. I'm a robber.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. This evening, we are speaking to Christian Theodore, who is a versatile individual with a passion for understanding, connecting with, and positively impacting the people around him. He is a brand ambassador for the Great Gentleman Sodas, as well as helping to manage one of the city's premier cocktail bars, Bar Le Mal Nécessaire. He likes to bring a Caribbean flair to the world of beverages and uses his experience as a bartender to create unforgettable experiences for his patrons. Beyond the bar, Christian showcases his passion in the realm of sports as an MMA competitor, training under the esteemed David Loiseau, former three-time world champion and UFC number one contender, with aspirations to eventually go professional. A dynamic individual, Christian also shares his knowledge by teaching striking at Crow Training Center in Saint-Henri. And when he's not honing his craft in the octagon, he enjoys sharing his deep love for music as a DJ, seamlessly blending the worlds of flavorful beverages, athleticism, and rhythm. You can find this MMA fighter, mixologist, and brand ambassador on his Instagram at the.haitian.sensation, Christian Theodore. I am very grateful that you decided to spend this Tuesday evening with us this evening. Thank you so much for being here. So we've covered a lot of topics, but it's in your bio and I want to talk about it a little bit. How did you come to being a DJ?
Yeah, DJing. Music was always my first passion, I would say. That was the thing. Well, maybe not my first. Like, I always loved sports, but I never really had as many opportunities to be in sports as I were. Music was always like the thing that kept me going. I played music in high school, and after high school, I kept on with the sax. I don't know if you see it in the background there. I haven't played it, honestly, not so much since I started training in MMA, but it's still a big love of mine and something I'm for sure going to get back to in my life one day or another. But DJing started in high school a little bit. So I got these, I don't know if you know, back in the day, they had these CDJs, but literally you have to put in a CD in them.
Yeah.
It was a whole hassle. But it was kind of fun for me to play around with for myself. I kind of saved up, like, I think it was like $500, got the shittiest, the worst version you could get.
Yeah.
And then just to kind of play around with, and I never did much with it. It was a fun way for me to listen to my music. You know, you get to rewind it, slow it down, maybe play around with pretending to scratch a little bit. It was fun for me.
Right.
But then later, by that time I was bartending at Dacha / Cabinet. So Cabinet was open on every day. So like Monday, Tuesday, I was on the Cabinet side. And then Dacha was the club side. And then a couple days a week, I was on the club side too. But when I was on the Cabinet side, there was a DJ just next to you. And it was a small, maybe 10, 12 person bar. There wasn't a lot of space.
Right.
So you have a little DJ playing his little thing, and he's getting paid pretty much more than you because they get hourly crazy amounts, and you, it's just a Monday. If it's slow, you make no tips. So you're like, oh.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, I wanted to work extra days, but without having to commit to opening and closing a bar and things like that.
Right.
So that's how I got involved with it. I was looking at him and he's like, yeah, man, you should try it. And then I had a lot of friends who were DJing. So I had access to the gear. That was the beginning, is you have access to the gear. So you don't have to go buy a bunch of equipment to start.
Yeah.
I just had to get a USB key, format it on Rekordbox. And I had a friend of mine teach me a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that's how I started, just practicing by myself when I could at the bar when they were closed. And so from there, I would do little parties. I would do little events. I would do little things. But I didn't do too much. I was just kind of a side thing. Every once in a while, I got to a DJ gig here and there.
Right.
And then I started throwing a couple little parties of mine. That, again, not too many of those. But then COVID hit. Okay. And that was dead for a long time. But when I got back after COVID, I became a manager at Mal Necessaire. And I was already a little bit of the people who were there, because the manager who'd left, Mickey, who is now a Compimus, he was the one who was taking care of DJs and he was connected in that. But I was the next one to, so I was like, you know what, let me take over the DJs. That was like, that's the thing that I still do just by myself, because everything is a kind of management wise at the bar. We all help each other. We're a few managers. We all do everything together.
Right.
Whether it's the menus, whether it's forming the staff, whether it's hiring, fire, all everything, we all take care of it together. And then each of us have like our own thing that we do. So I take care of largely booking the DJs, paying, all those things with the DJs, and just making sure the vibe is right every night. Essentially, that's my job. So when I started doing it, I was like, you know what? I got to get back into DJing, because I had to replace every once in a while. Last minute, somebody can't show up.
Yeah.
It's easier for me to just be like, you know what? I got my key. I'm going to jump in. But in the beginning, I was working so much behind the bar, I wasn't really able to be comfortable when I would DJ. So I was like, you know what? Let me give myself a day a week so I can get back comfortable in it. So now I DJ on Tuesdays. So tonight after the show, you guys can come see me at Mal Necessaire and listen to my tunes. You know, I'm probably going to be playing some old school R&B throwbacks. That's kind of been my vibe lately.
Yeah.
So I started DJing.
I got into it
that way, essentially, just like because I, for functionality, you know, I took a little step back from being behind the bar so much because it's so draining on my body on top of the MMA. So I was like 5 days a week at the bar. Now I'm only 2 days behind the bar, Saturdays and Sundays. And then I DJ on Tuesdays. And then every once in a while, I might replace if I need to, or if we're doing an event, I might jump on or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's what it looks like. And honestly, I love it. I'm getting, DJing is so fun. It's so fun. It's like bartending in a way. I'm setting the vibe. I'm contributing to the vibe. I'm behind the bar. I kind of dance. I'm enjoying myself. We talk, blah, blah. But when I'm in the booth, I get to look at everyone, see how they're moving, see how they're feeling it. And then I'm like, you know what? I got the next one for you. And then sometimes when it hits, you're just like, ah, it's so satisfying. You know, it's so fun when people are having fun listening to the music that you love, you know, that you, I picked this music, I put it on my key, and this is what I'm going to get you guys to dance to when you guys are vibing. It's amazing. You know,
yeah.
I love DJing. It's also, it's a really cool thing to do, man. And it just blends in well with the bartending and everything else that I do. So, yeah.
Yeah. I have a question for you about tipping, because in recent times, it's usually like cyclical, like every 2 to 3 years, maybe even 5 years, you know, the controversy surrounding tipping comes up, where like there's a lot of discussion around the fact that, you know, tipping shouldn't be necessary and people should always tip. And places like Japan, they refuse tips because they charge you proper prices for the services, and they pay their employees for those services. What do you think about this tipping culture that we have?
I'm in it, and I see both sides of it, and I understand, but here's my philosophy on it, if you guys want to get into it. It's, I came into this game, honestly, part of the reason why I decided to be a bartender instead of a cook is because you get tipped out, right? Because the tips make for a much better salary, and in the kind of industry where you don't get benefits, you don't get this or that, it's definitely cool. And I understand the whole, oh, man, then you should just charge us and then not tip. Cool. But the way I see it is this. You are paying for a luxury. It's not a necessity. You don't need to go to a restaurant. You can go to a grocery store. You can go. You don't need to go to a bar. You can go to SAQ, buy your stuff, make it, watch a video at home, and try to make it at home, you know? Mm-hmm. What you're paying for is for the lights, for the music, for the vibe, for the service. You're paying for. That's what you're paying for with the tip, right? The way I see it is this, because you have places like France where apparently the service is like super, they don't care about you. They're kind of borderline rude. They're bothered that you're here even sometimes. It's like, so they don't give you a good service, but they get, you know, they charge you the full amount or whatever. And that's their salary. So they don't care, you know?
Right.
So I know for a fact that their tips motivate your bartenders and your servers so much to give you good service. So that's why, like, you come here and people are happy, they smile at you, the blah, blah. It makes you feel welcome, mm-hmm. right? But also in the sense of, like, that's why I say, like, look, if just expect it in your budget that you're going to have to give up to 18, 20% if you have a super great service, if you're that generous, blah, blah, right? They kind of, industry standard is moving towards 18%, you know, but, you know, I get it. 15% is kind of the base minimum thing. The way I see it is this, it's cool that you get the option to, man, if your service really was terrible and you didn't enjoy yourself, you're not still forced to pay full, like the full quote unquote, like, oh, the tip included in your thing, because no matter what he does as a server, you're still going to have to pay the tip, you know? Yeah. So it's like, okay, you can be like, well, you know what? The service was really, truly terrible. I might give a 5, 10, or maybe nothing, depending on how I feel about the service.
Yeah.
So the way I see it is, like, at the end of the day, you're going to have to pay that money anyway. So it's either you don't, we put it in, and regardless of what service you get, you're paying it anyway. Yeah. Or don't put it in. You give the option to give me whatever you feel is necessary for the service that I gave you. And in the meantime, my job is to make sure you enjoy yourself. You know,
right.
That's where the difference is. And I think, to be honest, a lot of people are saying, let's do away with tip culture. Trust me, you don't want that, because your service and your experiences at bars and restaurants is going to suffer a lot from it. A lot. So the way I see it is, budget accordingly. If you know, you check online and the prices are this, expect that you're going to pay that extra little percentage.
Yeah.
And understand that if you didn't have to, it would be in the price anyway. So the price would be the same, you know? So it's like, the way I see it is, I understand tipping sucks in a lot of ways as the person who, but if you work in the bar industry, you understand that it's also kind of necessary, because all the places that they tip, the service is much better than the places where they don't tip to. I've seen that everywhere, you know? Right. So unless somebody can prove me wrong on that.
Yeah.
That's the way I see it. I get both sides, and I've been on the other side of it, but I also understand, I've seen, like, I think we don't want to do away with tips just yet, you know, because that's going to make your service suffer quite a bit. Because it's a big motivator for every bartender, every server that's out there. That's literally why I switched over from being a cook to being a bartender, and why I worked so hard to be a good bartender, is because my tips, my salary depends on it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What is something that you have learned in your being a DJ, being a bartender, and being an MMA fighter? What is something that you have learned that can translate universally across the board?
Man, a few things. What's that quote they say? If you see the way in one thing, you see it in everything.
Okay.
Kind of thing. It's like everything. Yeah, because I do so many things, you realize that, okay, if you can get good at one thing, it's the same thing you have to do to get good at the next and the next and the next. You just have to, once you have the blueprint, you can apply it to everything.
Yes.
So that's why I tell people, my sister who's younger, she lives with me now, she's finishing her high school. And I keep telling her, like, don't worry about what you're going to do or what you're going to get good at. Find something that you like and try to get as good as you can at that thing. And I'm telling you, that thing is going to carry you to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. So if in 5 years you realize that's not your path and you find something else, you at least know what it took to get good at this one thing.
Yeah.
Which is, being a good student is a skill. You know, you got to put your ego aside. You got to be willing to watch, learn, listen. You know what I mean? You got to, your eyes and ears have to be more open than your mouth. You know, and a lot of people, like, I have to teach people in martial arts, I have to teach people about bartending, I have to show people how to DJ sometimes. And it's like, a lot of people, it's like, they kind of just, yeah, okay, I got it. Oh, yeah, yeah, no. It's like, no, just let me, you're doing it wrong, or you know, you could be learning a bit better, or you could be doing this better. Let me just show you, because that's the way I'm the type of person, I'll put my head down, I'll shut up, and I'll do it the way you ask 100 times, and then I'll understand why I did it that way, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't mind doing that because I know that you have more experience than me, and I know that that's how I'm going to get to that point. That's the only way to get to that point. So that's what I think across all these things is, yeah, being a good student is going to get you so far in anything that you're going to do. And that takes, and what that takes is, you know, just putting your ego aside and being, let yourself be like clay, or like, you know, let yourself be molded, you know, find the people that you want to be molded by.
Yeah.
So like, if you want to be a good bartender, look at all the good bars that you would be like, oh, that's what I did. That's why I work at Mild. First time I showed up to Mild, they're slinging 8-9 drinks at a time. I had the same idea when I was watching MMA. I'm like, I could never do this. Or I'm like, you know what? Then I was like, you know what? I'm going to start. If I can work here one day, I feel like I'm going to have achieved something. You know, and then I did. Now I manage the place, and it's kind of crazy. But I went from busboy, barback, to I left, got a bunch of other experience, then came back as a server, then a bartender, and now I manage and DJ. You know, it's like, it stems from I knew what it took to get to a point where you can feel like you're mastering something. You know, it's like, you know, just be a good student. That's what I would say to people. Let yourself follow the stuff that you love, and be a good student, you know? Let yourself listen and observe and watch, and, you know what I mean? That's what I would say.
I think that is a beautiful point, to be a good student, and people forget that you don't stop being a student because you left an academic institution. You don't stop being a student because you're no longer going to university, college, high school. Every time that you step out of your door, you're a student of life. And every time that there's a new experience that you're taking in, you are a student of that experience. And you can decide whether or not that experience is a positive, has a positive impact on you, or it has a negative impact on you.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why, like, yeah, I always hated making the same mistakes twice and blah, blah. So I was always like, you know what? Any opportunity I get to learn something new, if I'm in a new situation, I'm just going to learn as much as I can. I'm going to think back on it and then come back the next time twice as good. And hopefully it'll be better. You know, that's the way I kind of lived my life. And that's kind of been, I think, since my parents kind of put that in me, you know, because they were very much... You know, we immigrated here. I was young. They had me, you know, because in Haiti, I started school way early. So, you know, they were teaching me how to do certain, you know, read, write by the time I was three. So by the time I showed up in school, I kind of already had that. I knew how to learn. So I kind of learned quick, you know. Yeah. So I think that's where that skill came from, is just like from my parents. And then I was able to apply that to everything that I do, essentially. It's just, okay, you can just get back to, okay, you're that little child who doesn't know anything, and you just start again from scratch. And a lot of people are not willing to do that. And you have to be willing to do that. Be willing to start from scratch and not knowing anything. And sometimes that means getting beat up at the gym. Sometimes that means spilling a drink at the bar. And that's okay, you know? Yeah. But be okay with making those mistakes and learning from them, you know?
That is a perfect note. So we are winding down to the end of tonight's show. Let people know where they can find you, how they can get in touch with you, if they want to take classes, and if they want to come and have a drink and have that that bartending mixologist experience from Christian Theodore. Let people know how to do that.
So the first thing I'll say is, please go check out the Great Gentleman Sodas page on Instagram and TikTok. They're doing really well, and there's a lot of more stuff coming out with that. So if you want to see me in action, learn some cool recipes, learn about bartending, that's the place to go. And then anything that's you want to do classes with me, you want to do privates, you want to come to the gym, or you want to come to the bar, or you want to book me for DJ stuff, that's all on my personal Instagram page. It's the.haitian.sensation. So anything fight related, anything bar related is going to be there. That's the Haitian, says the Haitian.sensation on Instagram. I'm only on Instagram right now. I'm kind of, you know, building my TikTok thing, but I don't know about it yet. We'll see about that.
Gotcha. No worries. Thank you so much, Christian, for coming and talking and sharing your story with us today. I feel like I had a good meal. I feel like I've learned a lot, and even was reminded of some things. Like, I love that you say to be a student of life. Like, be a student. That is so important, because sometimes we get down on ourselves for making mistakes or for not understanding. And when you're a student, you're in a position to learn. So that means that you're not going to understand the first time something is taught to you. Sometimes you won't understand a second or third or the fourth time, but eventually you'll understand if you keep that openness of being a student. That brings us to the end of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, we were speaking to Christian Theodore, who is an MMA fighter, a brand ambassador for the Great Gentleman Sodas, as well as he works as a manager at Le Bar Le Mal Necessaire.
Or The Necessary Evil in English.
The Necessary Evil. Find him at the.haitian.sensation. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and we are here every Tuesday evening. You have been listening to Soul Perspectives on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Oh, I got eyes in the back of my head, just in case I have to run. I do what I can when I can while I can for my people. While the clouds roll back and the stars fill the night, that's when I'm gonna stand up, take my people with me. Together we are going to a brand new home, far across the river. Can you hear freedom? I can feel it in my bones. Early in the morning, before the sun begins to shine, we're gonna start moving.
salvation and I fight with the strength that I got until I die. So I'm gonna stand up, take my people with me. Together we are going to a brand new home. Far away.
What you want and what you will, working for your dollar bill. Sad to see the old slave mill.
It's grinding slow but grinding still.
Walking home a youth gets killed. All he's free to shoot at will. Sad to see the old slave mill.
It's grinding slow but grinding still.
9 to 5, you know the drill. Weekends are a sharp thrill. Sad to see the old slave mill.
It's grinding slow but grinding still.
Cup run it over till it's filled. Take until they've had their fill. Sad to see the old slave mill.
It's grinding slow but grinding.
Some of us think we're too big. God, the system gives us jobs. Even though it's just a low-paying gig. Some of us will boast and brag. And those of us who think we're smart. Just because we don't have much. It's really not the case at all. It's riches that the flesh can't touch. Some of us won't respect names. Some of us won't respect laws. Some of us don't respect life, even though we worship God. And some of us won't let go faith, no matter what the price may cost.
Some of us won't practice hate, because we still believe in love. What you want and what you will, working for a dollar bill. Sad to see the old slave mill.
It's grinding slow but grinding still.
Walking home but trying to get still.
Walk to them. Yo, this Sean.
Before you war with me, get your money up. See them a galley send them backside body up. While them a trap all day and night in a your gal mouth side of where me two bars cuddle up. Copy and paste man style of studios. Yeah, them two bad mind are show no love. See me with me things I want take it, but my Glock them trip try take it if you dumb enough. While out, now my friend them just come out, I want asylum. Have your gal and I'm a Benz and me a ride out. Violate such you put your pan time out. Pan time out. The shine we just take where boy gal cause we confident. She left her boyfriend cause him not no sense. Them love chat, we no do arguments. Run up on me, you with that self-defense. Cause before you war with me, get your money up. See them a galley send them backside body up. While them a trap all day and night in a your gal mouth side of where me two bars cuddle up. Copy and paste man style of studios. Yeah, them two bad mind are show no love. See me with me things I want take it, but my Glock them trip try take it if you dumb enough. See me with me things I want take it, now take it lightly. Some a smile up in on my face and them never like me. Haters are the all time high. Love is pricey. Blind as fuck, but you claim that you're icy. Red flags from a distance. Intuition always on point. Me no response. Ancestors never fear me yet in an instant. Try step to me, you will sink quicksand. Before you war with me, get your money up. See them a galley send them backside body up. While them a trap all day and night in a your gal mouth side of where me two bars cuddle up. Copy and paste man style of studios. Yeah, them two bad mind are show no love. See me with me things I want take it, but my Glock them trip try take it if you dumb enough. Well, in a war, you lose some and you win some. The mind focus on several different incomes. Some of them I try bring badness to it. Well, bring some. So we not in a nothing with them. I will not beg no friend. Some of them I try run up them out and I go and let them go, but them only I pretend. Before you war with me, get your money up. So them a galley send them backside body.
DKUT,
yeah.
Hey, yo, check this out. This is Flavor Flav, and you listening to C. Hey, yo, check 1, 2. This is Flavor Flav, Public Enemy. You listening to K? Yo, check 1, 2. This is Flavor Flav, Public Enemy. And you listening to CKUT and the place to be from the bottom to the TOP.
Yeah, perfect, man. Thanks a lot, man. Keep doing that. Real heads, keep listening.
Dans leur rapport à l'élégance, les hommes et les femmes branchés signent et endossent le magasin Marco Mode Unisex, leur nom de confiance depuis 28 ans. Marco Mode Unisex, en partenariat avec Franklin Man Design, vous offre dans la robe que vous porterez, mesdames, la beauté, la magie, le modernisme, le style. Si l'élégance et le chic ont un nom, messieurs, ce nom, c'est le magasin Marco Mode Unisex, partenaire de franklinmandesign.com. Marco Mode Unisex, 9205 Saint-Michel, pour les hommes et les femmes qui veulent habiller leur beauté. Pour plus de renseignements, tapez marcomode.ca ou téléphonez au 514 322 83 66.
Dans l'industrie de l'audio, de la vidéo, de l'éclairage et de la sonorisation professionnelle, l'équipe de Sonomusique est incontestablement la meilleure. Ayant constamment innové depuis 20 ans dans le domaine de la sonorisation des grands événements et grâce à son système dernier cri, constitué d'enceintes acoustiques à la fine pointe de la technologie, Sonomusique vous offre une sonorisation puissante de grande envergure sur une longue portée. Pour la meilleure qualité de sonorisation possible à petite, moyenne et grande échelle, choisissez Sonomusique, le leader qui pense, innove et bâtit l'avenir de la sonorisation avec les nouvelles technologies. 3950 Jean Talon Est, coin 22e, proche de Pinot. Téléphone 514-723-6101.
Ascultați emisiunea de radio Marcaro pe 90,3 FM CKUT.
Se fa.